From the Ground Up, a podcast of the Alabama Extension Home Grounds team educating you about home landscapes, gardens, and home pests.
Carrie Steedley is an extension agent in Southeast Alabama, and she's here joining us today to talk about the Year of Invasive Plants. So welcome, Carrie.
Thanks, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so tell us about the Year of Invasive Plants. 2026, the Forestry and Wildlife team has come up with this, and tell us all about the project that you have.
All righty. So our 2026 Year of Alabama Invasive Plants, like you were saying, Brian, it is a project that we started. We've got a lot of members on our forestry and wildlife team that are helping with it, but also across other extension teams, like your home horticulture team as well. And it was really born out of these needs assessment that Alabama Extension does that our different program teams do occasionally. And a couple years ago, we had a Alabama landowner survey that we ran for about a year, and we asked people in Alabama, it was a public survey, we asked people what their interests were in programs they wanted to see with Alabama Extension, with, you know, what challenges they faced, and invasive plants were one of the top interests that we got out of this survey. And then last year, we had an extension-wide survey that anyone could participate in. And we saw the same thing, that invasive plants, invasive species, and their management was a real interest for our stakeholders, for people that were interested in learning more, those educational opportunities that the Alabama Extension provides. And so kind of based on those things, that was something that we came up with as a way to address those interests, but also the needs. Not only are we working, you know, we want to meet the needs of the people, the needs and the interests, but also what are our statewide needs across right. Alabama's public and private lands, right? What are our lands needs? Mm-hmm. And invasive plants are one of those, because we have so many, you know, we could talk about right. this for days and what's all out there. But this was a way to try and get public involvement. I'm so excited to share how people can get engaged, get involved with the project, and meet some of those personal needs and also those statewide needs. So we've got some really interesting things coming up, some great incentives, some great ways to get involved. So be on the lookout for sure throughout the year, throughout 2026.
Yeah. And our team on home horticulture, we're also helping you out, because we all know that you can't just start a project and do it by yourself. So, you know, you and your team, you're kind of leading this effort on this, and the Forestry and Wildlife is all in on this, and home horticulture too, because there's a lot of invasive things that affect us and you as well, and your team and everybody in the state. So we're kind of doing this together, and that's really good for us all to work together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got a lot of help, a lot of new publications, new articles that people around the state on different teams are working on. So it's a good way, you know, not just for the public to get on, you know, the receiving end of these articles, but also kind of bring our team members together, and we have more interaction and conversations right. about it. So I really enjoyed it already, just, yeah. you know, internally and externally.
Absolutely. And we've already been through, I guess, a month. Well, we're recording this in February, so we've already had about 6 weeks or so of weekly invasive plants, correct?
Correct. So every Sunday on our Alabama Extension Forestry, Wildlife, and Natural Resources Facebook and Instagram account, we are highlighting a different species, or maybe a couple species, but we're highlighting something new every week. And the intention behind when those species are highlighted are that they have features that are easily recognizable in that season. So, for example, what we've done, and the winter has been, you know, it might be a harder time of year to do some of this, but we've highlighted so far things like leatherleaf Mahonia, that's one of our evergreen invasives, and how to recognize that in the winter when a lot of other species may not be as easily recognizable. So kind of going throughout the year, we're highlighting species like Callery pear when it's in bloom, so that when it's got those standout features. Yeah. So it's got those standout features that you see even when you're just driving down the road and you see those bright white blooms and you can kind of connect the dots there.
Yeah. Well, that's a great idea because people learn to recognize those things and learn how to treat them if they're following along on our social media and your social media and stuff. So let me ask you this, what makes a plant invasive?
That's a great question. So officially an invasive species is one that is not native to the ecosystem that it's in, that it's present. And it has to meet one of these three categories. It either has to cause some kind of environmental or ecological harm where it is, or it has to cause economic harm, some kind of impact to the economy, or it causes some kind of harm to human health. So it has to meet one of those three categories and be a non-native plant. And we can get into the weeds a little bit. With our native versus non-native in Alabama, we've got so many distinct ecosystems. We've got the coastal ecosystems and our Appalachian, our mountain, we think is mountains in Alabama, very distinct. So we can have species that are native to our coastal ecosystems, but not native to maybe that northeast corner, right?
Right.
But in terms of the project, we're really focusing on plants that are not native to Alabama, not native to the U.S. mostly, because we have so many of those to focus on, that's what we're trying to do.
So what are some of the most populated species in Alabama that are invasive? I know you mentioned the Callery pear or the Bradford pear. That's a really big one for us on the home horticulture team because people, you know, they love them, but then they are pretty, but they stink and they're very, very invasive, especially their progeny when they're out in the fields and they grow really big thorns. It's just really bad. So, what are some other species or what's some of the top ones in Alabama?
Sure. And Callery pear, that is one. It's got a lot of history. Some of these have a lot of history in the state. They've been here for a long time. They were brought here for, you know, a specific purpose, agriculture, erosion control, you know, like you said, some of them aesthetics. We brought them on purpose, because of how they look, we want to include them in our landscape. And now we're seeing the effect of, you know, them escaping our lawns, our landscapes, and now they're disrupting some of these native ecosystems and crowding out our native plants. But in Alabama, of course, we've got the Callery or Bradford pear, kudzu, the vine that ate the South. Mm-hmm. You know, many people are familiar with that one. Chinese privet as well, super, super common plant in every single Alabama county. We've got the Chinese tallow tree, which, fun fact, is now the fourth most common tree in Louisiana. So super invasive there. We do not want that to be Alabama, right? And that's what this project is aiming to address is, you know, first and mostly that public awareness aspect. If people are at least familiar with it, then that can lead to control. So that's that first step where we want to increase that public awareness. So we don't, you know, we keep our native forests and our native species that we have so many of in Alabama. But of course, we've got non-native bamboo, very widespread in the state. Mimosa, which is another one, you know, it's pretty to a lot of people, but it's caused some issues. Kogan grass.
Oh, that's a bad one.
Yeah, that's a bad one. That has impacted the forest industry, especially down here in South Alabama. It's kind of working its way. It's being found more so in North Alabama now.
And you know, there's also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, Japanese climbing fern is another one that is moving via pine straw in our landscape beds. You know, people want to put pine straw around their flower beds, and and the Japanese climbing fern, it's spread by spores, so it spreads very easily. So that's one to look out for in all kinds of landscapes. Yeah.
That's, you know, and that's an interesting point you bring up, is a lot of these invasives are invasive because they spread so easily. Like the spores on those, you know, they can be wind disseminated, or, you know, like you said, people landscaping with the pine straw that they're picking up in the woods and stuff. So these can be easily spread, and you think you're doing good, and then all of a sudden you have an outbreak, and then you're stuck with it.
Right. I was spread by birds, and that's what I tell people, you know, you may get rid of all the invasives on your property, and that's great and wonderful. You still got to kind of be on the lookout for ways that they can be brought in and start new plants over the year. So it's a challenge for sure.
I know in our world, of course, you know, we're dealing with homeowners, and English ivy, you know, that's one that's invasive. The heavenly bamboo or Nandina, that's one that people still plant in their yard, but we're seeing it out in the woods now because, like you said, the birds are eating the little fruit, the little berries on there, and then they're going out in the woods, and now you have this, you know, the Nandina growing everywhere in the woods, and it was never meant to be there. We call that an escape. I don't know what y'all call it in the forestry world, but we call that an escape.
Yeah, I'd call it the same thing, escape ornamental, and Nandina for sure is one that I think we're going to be seeing more of. I mean, it's across the state, that one.
Right.
And that one does have the capacity. It can be harmful to birds like cedar waxwing, where their diet is primarily berries. So if they eat a lot of Nandina, it can poison them because of the cyanide properties in the berries. So kind of another reason, maybe, you know, don't intentionally plant Nandina, and that can go into our, you know, preventative strategies,
right,
is first starting with knowing, you know, what's not the best thing to plant in a landscape.
So you mentioned prevention. What's some other ways that you can prevent other than planting these possible invasive plants?
Yeah, and I think the first step with prevention is knowing what is invasive around you. So you can, of course, you can prevent planting these species of concern, because they're still for sale. And I do want to mention this study from University of Massachusetts a few years ago, that they looked at over 1,200 invasive species in the U.S. and documented that over 60% of them were still available for sale. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And that may be at, you know, your big box stores or small nurseries or online retailers too. So you kind of have to do your digging a little bit when you're planning your landscape, making sure you're getting something that's not prone to spreading, that's not a known invasive. And that's a challenge, you know, I think, especially for people that don't have the background in plant identification, things like that. It can be a hurdle to start that journey of, you know, looking into plant identification, looking at those scientific names. But it is really for, you know, the best interest for the state, for the general public. And for your yard, you know, of course, you want to see the birds. A lot of homeowners want to see the birds, and they want to do good for the birds.
Right.
So it is, you know, part of that process, but also with that prevention aspect of things, you want to be very mindful of where soil is being disturbed, because like you mentioned, a lot of our invasives are very quick to establish. And the places that we encourage monitoring, even if they're not there yet, are these places where soil has been disturbed. So whether that's food plots, fire breaks, any kind of trails, if there was a storm damage somewhere, you've got some trees blown over, if the area was recently flooded, places like that, roadsides as well. Those are all places that are susceptible, I'd say, to having those invasive plants kind of move in to get established. So at least we have a target, you know, we have places to look out for, and I think that's a great place for people to get started, especially, you know, landowners. But whether you have a backyard or, you know, 400 acres, these are places that you can look out for those. Or you're a community member, maybe you don't have land, but you're looking out, you know, around your park, around places that you visit for your recreation, and you can look out for these species in those areas.
If you have these in your yard or on your land, what are some steps that you can do to help not just prevent by keeping away from these invasive species, but also you already have it? What's some control methods that you can implement?
And there are several good ones out there, and it's going to depend on a few factors. Of course, we're looking at the species that you have, you know, your target species, what's going to work for that one. But also what season are we in? If it's spring and those energy reserves are pushing, you know, nutrients out towards the leaves. Maybe that's a time that we don't do any kind of foliar chemical control. It's not going to be translocated where we want. But in the winter, you know, we're speaking about this in February. In the winter, we've got some good options with a cut stump. If you cut the base of the tree or shrub or some of our larger woody vines like kudzu, wisteria, English ivy, if you cut those, at the base, at the ground level, and you can treat the stump with a herbicide. Something like glyphosate would work well. That's a really good option for effective control, or a basal bark treatment. You use a specific herbicide. Typically, that's a triclopyr ester with an oil carrier. You're treating the lower 12 to 15 inches of a stem of a smooth bark
Like privet.
tree or shrub. Yeah, like privet's a really good one for this. Something typically less than 6 inches diameter, that's a good option. That basil bark spray during the growing season, those foliar treatments are pretty good. But we do have other, you know, a lot of people want to stay away from the herbicides, the chemicals, and there are ways to kind of keep at that, to keep going. It will take more, maybe more time, maybe a little bit more labor intensive, because if you cut it and those herbicides are not applied, it's going to resprout. So you kind of got to stay at it, make sure those energy reserves get depleted over time. Or there are tools out there like a weed wrench that you can pull those kind of smaller saplings out of the ground. And you just want to go back to those areas and monitor for any resprouts that could come up and pull those. We also say, you know, if a privet's maybe less than 2 feet tall, the soil is moist or loose, you can a lot of times hand pull those out of the ground as well. And some other species are good for this hand pulling as well. When they're small, you've got moist soil, that's a good time to do that. If you've got larger diameter trees, methods like hack and squirt, where you use a machete, you go around, and it may depend on the product that you use, the chemical that you use, the herbicide. If you make notches around the stem and you spray a herbicide in that, that's a good way to kill those larger diameter trees without having to take a chainsaw to it. But you just wouldn't want to do that anywhere where a standing dead tree, you know, where you wouldn't want a standing dead tree. If it's right next to your house, it could fall on your house. Probably not sure. a good option for that, for that one. So there are lots of ways to control it. If you have questions, you want to talk about your situation, of course, call us, call your local extension office, and we can kind of tease those details out and figure out what may be a good solution for you. Mm-hmm. But there are several options. So that's good.
And we also have a lot of publications that relate to each one of these methods as well. And they have some, I think they've been updated recently. And so they're really good. I send them out to my clients a lot. So it's out there on aces.edu if you're interested in learning more about those methods. And we can put some links up. But reach out to us to help identify those things if you don't know what it is.
Yes, that's the first step, is that identification. If we don't know it's a problem, we're not going to be able to look for the solutions, right? So that's definitely the first step.
So how can people get involved with this? You know, we want to eliminate these species as much as possible. We would love to eliminate kudzu. Everybody, that's always their first go-to. But really, things like privet covers probably more acreage than anything in Alabama. So how can people really get involved?
So our 2026 Year of Alabama Invasive Plants Project, we've got lots of ways people can get involved with that. Social media campaign I mentioned earlier, we would love for people to like and share those posts that come out every Sunday where we're highlighting, you know, one or a couple species at a time. And that is where we're trying to increase public awareness, is through the social media. We want to capture them at that point and bring them in to what else the project is offering. We've got classes and workshops, both online, in person. We've got a lot of volunteer opportunities with partners where people can go out and have that hands-on look at these invasives and ways to control them. A lot of partners are working on this, especially North Alabama. North Alabama has had a lot of volunteer opportunities in the Sipsey Wilderness area in the Bankhead mm-hmm. National Forest. And then also around Huntsville, there's been several opportunities around Huntsville, and Auburn has had some as well. And they'll probably have some in the future. South Alabama, we're planning some around Troy, some volunteer opportunities, some classes. And the Troy Arboretum is going to be a good partner for us down here. We're going to do some work with them at the Arboretum to remove some invasive plants there. But we're going to update our events list on our main webpage that's on our aces.edu website. So if you go to our aces.edu, you search 2026 Year of Alabama Invasive Plants, it will bring you to the website with links to our social media, with that event list. And also, we've got a couple what I consider cool opportunities. And one is a pledge. You can tell us about your goals for 26 and what you intend to do to kind of address the issue of invasive plants. If you intend to control these on your own property or join a volunteer event and control them in, you know, your community, your public lands around you. So you can tell us about a little bit about your motivation, your background with invasive plants. We really want to know people's starting points, because at the end of the year, it's going to be very impactful for us to know what people learned, what people took away from the project, and if we were successful. And that's something that we do with Extension. Of course, we want to measure that. But we hope people take away this information. They use it for years to come, right? That's the goal, is that starting point. Another component of the project is our action report form. And this is a way that people can log their hours, whether that's controlling any method, whether that's hand pulling, cut stump, that basil bark spray that I mentioned, any way that they controlled or removed plants, they can report those hours to us. And we've got some incentives for this. So we really want to encourage action by the public, whether, you know, that whether that's private land or public lands, you go to a volunteer event. And for every month that someone reports hours mm-hmm. worked, their name will go into a drawing for our participation incentive of the month. So for February, it's a pair of loppers. For March, yeah, they're good incentives. And then for March, we kind of change it up from month to month. But for March, it'll be a backpack sprayer or a book bundle. So some people may not need a backpack sprayer, so they may want to go with a book bundle. So we've got some good incentives.
Yeah, and those are great.
Yeah. And then if people report more than 5 hours, we're going to have some kind of tier incentives as well. So 5 hours, we've got a spray bottle that's really useful for hack and squirt or cut stump applications, as well as a poster, Invasive Plants of Alabama poster. For 15 hours, we're going to have custom bandanas that have invasive plants on them. So if you're on the trail, you can put on your bandana and use it as a reference. And then we'll have some guides as well if you report more than 25 hours in the year. And we're already seeing people report their hours and they're getting, they're putting in some real work. So I've really enjoyed seeing that so far and how people have been engaging with the pledge, with the action report form. It's been great so far, and it's just February. So
that's awesome.
I'm super excited. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this is a problem that we can do something about this, you know, no matter how small or large of a problem you have with this invasive species, we can do something. We all can do something, whether it's just pulling it out. If you see it, especially the small ones, it's much better, much easier to control at a smaller stage of development than it is when it's, you know, head high or even larger. So let's try to, you know, learn to identify these things by watching, you know, the Facebook ads that are coming up, telling about each species every week. So watch those on the Facebook and Instagram on Forestry and Wildlife and Natural Resources. Get involved, log your hours, and there'll be information on our website about that. And if you need to contact Carrie or any of us, home horticulture agents, or any of the Forestry and Wildlife Natural Resources people, you can go to aces.edu. And you can find that contact information. Carrie's down in Southeast Alabama. I'm up in the Northwest Alabama. So, you know, we're scattered all over the state. So wherever you happen to be at, just, you know, you can even call the local office and they can help you get in touch with us. So learn to do that. Help us take care of this problem. And let's try to eliminate some of these species in our yards and our properties.
Yes, there's a lot of great people resources out there. Those publications that you mentioned. So a lot of people resources, educational resources, print resources. You can print those articles at your local extension office and get them online. There are lots of apps to help with this as well. So lots of ways to get, you know, if you're just starting and you're starting with that identification process, there are guides, there are lots of great resources for those plant identification needs.
Yeah. And we're here to help. That's what we do as extension agents. We're here to help you. So feel free to reach out to us. So Carrie, thank you for being on the podcast, and we appreciate your effort towards this and taking the lead on this. And we really appreciate all the information you've given us.
Thanks, Brian. I'm so excited for people to get involved and for us to meet new people around the state and talk more about invasive plants and hopefully do some removal, do some control along the way.
All right. Thanks again.
Thanks, Brian.
From the Ground Up is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.